seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive, and today we have a show that will divide up between local and national. We will start with some high school track and field notes. Over the weekend, the Carbon Dinos finally got to start their 2024 campaign. They did it with a Farm Bureau Invitational, and it seems as if that meet just gets bigger and bigger year by year. Tons of teams and tons to recap. It was a solid day for both the Carbon boys and girls teams. So Coach Jimmy Jukes is going to join us. That'll be next segment here on Drive Time Sports, and we'll talk about the opener for track and field. We'll also talk NBA basketball. We only have about 3 weeks left in the season, and then we'll move into the postseason. And I think things are pretty much set, at least in the Western Conference, as far as the 10 teams, the four that'll go into the play-in round and the six that have already clinched a spot. The Jazz firmly on the outside looking in now. They've dropped all the way to the 12th spot in the Western Conference. They're still, six and a half games back. For the most part, their season is going to be over. But when you look at the firepower in the Western Conference play-in round, it's pretty phenomenal. If the playoffs were to begin today, OKC 1, Denver 2, Minnesota 3, the Clippers 4, Pelicans 5, Kings 6. So that means in the play-in round, Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving with Dallas, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant with Phoenix, Steph Curry, Draymond Green with Golden State, Anthony Davis, LeBron James with the Lakers. That is so much firepower in the Western Conference play-in round. It's loaded. Eastern Conference, I mean, you get Miami, Philadelphia, Chicago, and Atlanta. So you have the defending Eastern Conference champions in the play-in round, and we could have Joel Embiid, the Philadelphia 76ers, in the play-in round as well. So as far as the playoffs are concerned, I think it's one of the more entertaining, or setting up to be one of the more entertaining in quite some time in the NBA. So we will touch on that. That's coming up in just a bit as well. It's Monday, so our good friend James Holis, he'll take out the time to join us in just a bit. That'll be on the backside of the show coming up in about 30 to 45 minutes. So that's what we have in store as far as guests are concerned. Right now, we'll take a look at the national headlines, and I didn't have a chance to talk about this on Friday, because we were on the road calling USU Eastern basketball, which we'll talk about that in just a moment. But in the NFL, Aaron Donald called it a career on Friday morning. I really can't say that I was surprised. I think the timing of it is what was most shocking. But I think a true testament to the way some organizations conduct business in the NFL, the Rams kept this under tight wraps really throughout the entire offseason. And I saw an interview with Coach Sean McVay, who said it was the day after the season came to an end, the day after the Rams lost to the Lions. He said that Donald told him he was full. McVay said he understood, and they knew that he was going to retire. And it was also kind of in the air throughout the entire previous season. I just don't think it would be a huge, or shouldn't have been a huge surprise to anyone that has followed the story. But here's what the NFL loses. Okay, I think when you look at Aaron Donald, you have a legitimate argument to say he's the greatest defensive player that the game has ever seen. And I'm not a big fan of hyperbole here on the show. I always try to keep things in context. I always try to never become a prisoner of the moment. But when you look at it, 10 years, 10 Pro Bowls. 8 times this guy was a first-team All-Pro. 3 times he was the AP Defensive Player of the Year. He probably should have won more than 3 Player of the Year awards, Defensive Player of the Year awards. He went to two Super Bowls and he won one. Guy has 111 career sacks as an interior lineman. Donald is so good. He was so good that we compared a defensive tackle constantly to defensive ends. Think about that. So, again, the NFL's losing an all-time great. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Yes, to me, I put him top three defensive player of all time. To me, he's in the top three. And I think that list, it's a very short list, and I just don't think there's a ton of room for argument. I think Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White, and Aaron Donald, in no particular order, to me, the three greatest defensive players of all time. For a decade, this guy was dominating on that end of the field. So it did seem a little bit shocking that it's the middle of March, but apparently the Rams knew about this in December, and they've approached the entire offseason as if Donald was not going to be there. So this is a topic that we will dive into a little bit more tomorrow on Football Tuesday. But again, a big, big offseason for retirement, and Aaron Donald's going to top that class. When we look at the 2029 Pro Football Hall of Fame class, Aaron Donald is going to be at the top of it as one of the greatest defensive players to ever play the game. So that came out on Friday. Some other news coming out of the NFL today. Free agency maybe is tapered down a little bit, but it's only because the draft is not that far off, and you're going to see teams continue to maneuver, especially around the salary cap. Today, the Cowboys reducing quarterback Dak Prescott's massive hit by reworking his contract going into the final year of the deal. So a $5 million roster bonus has been converted into a signing bonus, and that reduces the upcoming cap hit by about $4 million to just over $55 million now. Still a huge, huge deal. But the Cowboys can create even more cap relief with an extension of Prescott. And I think it's only a matter of time before this gets done. The Cowboys are trying to sign Prescott to a contract extension right now. And again, Jerry Jones has said that the club's plan is to keep Prescott. I think one of the highest profile jobs in sports is the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. It's one of the highest profile jobs there is. And because of that, every time the Cowboys fall short, whoever is playing quarterback is going to get hammered by the media, going to get hammered by fans. It's just the way it works. It doesn't happen with the San Francisco 49ers, right, who have a longer Super Bowl drought than the Dallas Cowboys. Doesn't happen there, although you could. There are teams, there are high-profile brands, but it doesn't seem like that position is under near the scrutiny that the Cowboys quarterback spot is under on a yearly basis. For those who think the Cowboys should move on from Dak Prescott, why? What is your plan? I'd like to know. What's your plan? Is there a better option out there? No, can't move on from this guy. So when Jerry Jones comes out and says, no, we're not moving on from him, that's what he has to say. He doesn't have a choice. Prescott's going to be a Cowboy. He's going to be a Cowboy for a very long time, just because there's really no other options. Very rarely do you see a team rework the quarterback room to the extent of the Pittsburgh Steelers, which if I had the sound, my soundboard queued up, I would play a round of applause for the Pittsburgh Steelers, because they reinvented that quarterback room, going from Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph to Russell Wilson and Justin Fields in a week span. Bravo. That's unheard of in the NFL. Dallas can't do that. They don't have the means to do that. So that's what's happening right now with the national sports front. Tomorrow, all kinds of football talk coming your way because it's Football Tuesday. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA. The Utah Jazz will return to the airwaves tonight here on KOAL. 7 o'clock, we get the Timberwolves and the Jazz live coverage at 6:50. That's the only game in the 7 o'clock hour. NBA basketball tips off at 5:30. We get the Cavs and the Pacers. The Pistons will take on the Celtics, and the 76ers host the Heat. 6 o'clock tonight, Portland at Chicago. 8 o'clock, Knicks-Warriors. That game on ESPN. We get Memphis at Sacramento at 8. And then tonight, it's the Lakers and the Hawks at 8:30. Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports straight ahead. We are live from the Sutherland Studios.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And the junior college basketball season came to a close on Saturday night as the USU Eastern Lady Eagles suffered a 56-53 loss to Southern Idaho in the Scenic West Athletic Conference Championship game. After knocking off Salt Lake Friday night, the Lady Eagles advanced to the conference championship game for the first time since 1982. After a slow start in the first quarter, USU Eastern captured a six-point lead midway through the first half. The second half, however, belonged to CSI. They used their stingy defense to eke out the three-point win. Despite the loss, USU Eastern was led by Summer Christensen, who scored 13 points to go along with 7 rebounds and a steal. Olivia Nielsen also scored 13 points for the Lady Eagles, as she too grabbed 6 rebounds. Hadley Humphreys was the lone player with a double-double. She finished with 11 points and 10 boards. The loss on Saturday brings an end to the season as the Lady Eagles win 21 games in advance to the conference tournament and the conference championship. Later this week, we'll recap the season with head coach Chelsea Warburton. We jump over to high school athletics, and it was a busy weekend for the Carbon Dino baseball team as they traveled on the road to St. George for 4 games in 2 days. In the end, Carbon comes back with a record of 3-1 in the 4-game set. On Friday, Carbon defeated Murray 11-5 and Highland 8-2. Saturday, the Dinos split, topping Idaho Falls 12-2, and then wrapping up the weekend with a 10-0 loss against Pineview. Now 6-2 on the season, Carbon will resume Region 12 play when they return to the field tomorrow to take on the Delta Rabbits on the road. Wednesday, Carbon will be at home for the final game this week again, playing Delta. Start times for both games are scheduled for 3 p.m. The Emory High School baseball team also played in 4 games over the weekend as they traveled out of the area. On Friday, Emory picked up 2 wins, defeating Montezuma Cortez and North Summit. The game against Montezuma, Emory scored 17 runs in a 17-2 win. They also beat North Summit 13-2. On Saturday, Emory suffered their only loss of the weekend, falling to San Juan 3-1, but they did recover to close out the weekend with a win, topping the Grand Red Devils 5-4. Emory will resume region play tomorrow. They'll take on the Juab Wasps. Start time for that game is set for 3:30 p.m., and it is scheduled to take place at Emory High School. Now we stick with Emory High School baseball, and right around the corner, it's the team's annual kids camp. This will take place April 6th. It'll be at the Emory High School Armory. Group A, which is ages 4 through 8, will take the field from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., and then Group B will take the field from 12 to 3 p.m. Group B is for ages 9 to 14. The cost is $25 per child, and you can find more information right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. Aside from basketball and baseball, there were a number of other sports in action over the weekend in the Castle Country, and we'll recap everything tomorrow. You can also visit CastleCountryRadio.com for the complete recap. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
We're going to talk high school track and field here today on the Coach's Corner. Season is now off and rolling for the Carbon Dinos. They got to play host to the Farm Bureau Invitational on Saturday. Good tradition with that event. Coach Jukes, Richard Hackwell, they've always put on a top-notch event. And you have a lot of schools from all around the state joining. It was a huge meet. We're going to talk about Carbon's performance and more. Joining us right now over the phone, we have head coach Jimmy Jukes. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Thanks, Jordan.
Yeah, absolutely, Coach. I know it was a big one this weekend for you guys. Not only do you get to open up the season, but you get to do it at home, and you get to do it with the Farm Bureau Invitational. I know that this specific meet has really it's developed a following and kind of a tradition, and it's a huge meet, and you get to perform in front of the hometown crowd. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun, and we had a lot of people. It was cold. I think we saw all 4 seasons. We saw rain, hail, snow, and sunshine. Wind, you name it, we had it.
And that, for me, Coach, I look at that as a spectator, and I say, okay, you're kind of getting, the best of one world, yet the worst in the other, because it can affect, right? It's the ultimate variable when you're talking track and field. How are these kids going to perform? How are their bodies going to react when the weather just continues to change? I think it's a unique element.
Right, it is. It's unique, and it's definitely... you know, you just never know with the way the weather's going to be, what kind of performances you're going to get. For a distance runner, it was about perfect. It was nice and cool. But for like a thrower studying in the cold, it's a little hard.
Let's look at the final statistics, final results of this specific meet. And we'll start with the girls' side. As you alluded to before we hopped on air, there is going to be a lot of parity in this region as far as the girls' competition is concerned. Now, Carbon finishes fourth. Emory finishes in a first-place tie with North Sevier. And then you have Union just barely ahead of you guys in third. I mean, we're talking about 10, 12 points separating first all the way to fourth. And if you want to really add to it, Manti is only about 15 points back of first place. I mean, that is such a close-knit group right there.
It is. You know, I mean, that's the thing is this new region in this 3A, I mean, especially on the girls' side, it's, I mean, you get to the right meet, and it's just going to be who performs and where you put your kids and stuff. I mean, Emory's got some studs over there that perform really well, and Manti's loaded in the throws, and, you know, Juab's not even that far down the list either, and they're there, and Union knocks some of our kids out doing some of the things they do. So it's going to be a lot of fun in that track side. And, you know, when you get to that Region 12, I mean, I always refer to Region 12 as the SEC of 3A because it seems like all the loaded track programs are in that same region. And so we got to get through region. That's got to be our number one focus. But, you know, this week we worked on our state qualifiers a little bit, so.
Yeah, I know there's always nuance to it, and you and I have talked about this a million times, Coach. Not every meet do you approach saying, okay, we're going to finish at the very top of the leaderboard. There are other things that you want to get accomplished, specifically early on in the track season. And in talking to you off the cuff, you guys accomplished a lot of those things.
Yeah, I think every meet you kind of approach a little bit different. It's not like basketball or softball or baseball or anything like that where, you know, your win percentages matter. For track, it's getting the kids ready to be ready at the state meet or get them into the state meet if you can. And you can get them there early if you can get them to run qualifying times early. And we knew we could do that this week. And that's kind of, we focused on a few of those kids, knowing that we could get them qualified. And then we needed to see what the rest of our team looked like. There will be meets that we want to win, you know, like Eastern Utah Championship. We'll go after that, try to win that meet. We always try to win at home. I'm not saying we didn't try to win this weekend, but we really, our number one priority was getting our relays qualified for state.
As far as the relays are concerned, Coach, it's always one of those events that's packed, it seems like, in 3A. I don't pay too close attention to 4, 5, 6A, but it seems like in 3A, I mean, just the most minor mishap can really cost you. It just seems like it's close.
Yeah, it really is. You know, you just have a small problem in like a 4x1. You could drop from first to, you know, not even finishing the race. And so there's a lot of things that can happen there. And, you know, the medley, it's we have the state, the defending state champ medley team, and we're just replacing one member is all. And they looked great on Saturday. And so the medleys, we take a lot of pride in our relays. And Jeff Blake, my coach that does the relays, he takes a lot of pride in it. He holds the kids to a high standard. They work on handoffs quite a bit. They work the fundamentals of how to do that. And it's really shown off in what we've been able to do.
Let's talk about some of those top performers, Coach. Obviously, Rosalind Stowe is going to be one that everyone talks about. She was outstanding as a freshman. It's amazing to think that she's only a sophomore, and she still accomplished some incredible things right out of the gate.
Yeah, she does. You know, and Roz is such a neat girl. She's got a lot of things that she does outside of track that are cool. You know, she's a cross-country runner as well. She's a really good crocheter. She's an awesome kid, but you know, we weren't sure how she'd feel Saturday, and she went out and just put on a show, you know, and did it in Roz fashion. We start off our medley team. She anchored our 800 there, and they qualified for state, and really wasn't much of a race with the way she ran. And then, you know, you got to credit Blythe Bradford and Mia Crompton and Gianna White on that relay. They did a really good job of getting her in a good position on that 800. And, you know, that'll be a lot of fun. I think that's the fastest time in the state in 3A. Might be the fastest medley in the state overall, actually. And so that was fun. And then, you know, Roz goes and runs a mile and ran a smart race, ran a great time in that, and then won the 800. And so she really did well to just kind of calm her nerves and go after it, and I was really impressed with her.
Who were some of the other girls, Coach, that maybe in some of the other events that really caught your eye or had a pretty good performance?
Yeah, you know, when I look through it, I think Sophie Taylor looked really well this week, our other distance runner. She ran some really good times in there. You know, our distance program with her and Ada Bradford and Ellie Hansen and You got Kaylee Pitcher and a couple other girls in that mix that do a good job on the distance side. They ran the 2 mile and that. They always follow through really well. And then I was really impressed with Blythe Bradford. She's fast. She was a little disappointed because she thought she should be up a little bit higher, but she is a fast kid. And the thing is, she gets by the end of the year, you're going to see how fast she can go. I was really impressed with Gianna White. She kind of had an off meet for her standards, but 4x4, she put it together and really ran a really good leg for us there. And, you know, Mia Crumpton's always running well as well. You just never know. Our hurdlers are coming along. We've got some young girls there that are getting into that, and we have some of our veterans over there. So it'll be a lot of fun to see where we're at. But, we have girls from top to bottom, and so it should be a lot of fun.
Again, our guest right now, Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbon High School Track and Field Squad. Coach, let's move over to the boys' side. And once again, I mean, we look at Region 12 and the way things kind of shape out. Both Carbon and Emory are top five, but Juab kind of runs away with the competition on the boys. Is that an anomaly? Is that something to expect moving forward? Or are they just that loaded? I mean, what did you make of Juab's performance on Saturday?
I think Juab's the team to be. I think they proved on Saturday that they have the guns to do it, and they're loaded. And so I think that Juab really, they've got the athletes. I mean, they got sprinters. They've got the whole package. I mean, they've got throwers. They've got everything. You know, we knew on our boys' side we've got a lot of talent, and the fact that they placed fifth with the talent that we've got is actually pretty awesome. Because we're a young team. We don't have a lot of, we're not heavy senior ridden there. We have a lot of younger kids that are stepping up. You know, Easton Humes is our one senior that is going to hurt for us to lose when he leaves. But he had a good day. But Evan Criddle, man, that kid was good on Saturday. We knew he was going to be good watching him at practice. He trains hard. He runs hard. Really impressed with him.
The competition on the boys' side, Coach, I know it's always it's different than the girls. And I don't mean that in a better or worse way, but it just seems like, specifically in this region, going back to the comment that you made about just how packed it really is, the boys' side is going to be, it's very difficult. It's a very difficult competition.
It is. And the thing is, we're just going to need the right kids. I mean, there's nothing that could rule our guys out. I mean, we could go up against a Juab in our region and do very well. We just got to find a little bit more depth, and we have a lot of young talent that we're fostering along. They look like a Carter Branch that ran the hurdles for us. He ran really well. He high jumped for us as well. He looked pretty good. You know, Traxton's coming on in the long jump where we need him, and you know, his high jump was off on Saturday, but that's okay. We're just trying to build and be a little bit better where we can be, and we just need some of these young kids to step up and go. We got a Ben Sims that's, you know, a freshman that's out. We have a lot of freshman sophomore in this class, and it's just going to get better and better. We were without Kale Boris, one of our throwers. He had a shoulder separation in practice, and so we're waiting for that to heal before we get him back. And so we were down a little bit there, but I think we've got a lot of upside on this boys' team, especially with as young as they are. I think you're going to see them improve, and by the time we get to region, they might be able to be enough to surprise some teams.
I know it's tough for you to talk about Traxton with him being your son, but Coach, here's a defending state champ, right? And so when you return off of a state championship season, and he's not the only, I know we got a couple of returning state champs, is there more added pressure, or are they more loose early on in the season?
Usually there's more added pressure, but Traxton is, I mean, and this is probably me speaking, you know, as a coach and as a dad in some aspects, he has a different element about him. Like anybody that, I mean, it was funny, some of the coaches are like, well, here's Traxton doing Traxton things. And what they mean by that is he gets in these meets that he'll go down and qualify in the long jump and then go over in the high jump and just, I mean, his legs are tired. We work these kids a lot, and you know, he's working hard in practice, and so he wasn't 100% healthy, but he just has this ability where he can lose in meets like this, and it doesn't matter. And then when the bright light is on at state, he's like, okay, let's go. Let's see what we can do. And it's a lot of fun to watch him. He'll show glimpses of things to people, and he has a way of just not letting it bother him, where I think some kids, they just really, it's a lot of pressure. You know, where he's a two-time state champ, you would think that the pressure would start to get to him a little bit, and it might be a little bit in some aspects where he's maybe pushing a little bit. He knows the expectations are there, and so for him to focus on, like, long jump and javelin a little bit to start the season is maybe his way of kind of subsiding the pressure a little bit and being like, okay, I'm going to just kind of park the high jump for a minute and I'll get back going on it. But, and we've watched him jump 6'3", 6'4", in practice. And so we kind of expect him to be pretty good at the end of the year.
Well, we can end with this, Coach. If we just look ahead, it is a busy week. You guys have two meets coming up. You got to go to Richfield, then you got to go to San Juan. I know that it's, or excuse me, Delta, and then you got to go to San Juan. And I know that these are two, I guess, different approaches to both of these meets, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, the Delta meet's a non-qualifier, so we're not really, I mean, we can't qualify anything for state at that meet. We get to load up our team and kind of go and see some of these kids that maybe didn't have an opportunity to run in a certain event because we were limited a little bit last week. We'll get to see them. We'll kind of use it more as a workout day for some of our top kids. And then we go down to San Juan. It's another qualifier, and so we may focus a little bit more. And I think we'll go after our girls 4x4. So if we can't get that qualified, I think we're looking at our boys' medley a little bit, see if we can't put a good medley team and just kind of rearranging some of those races like that. And then, you know, for some of these kids, we really want them to go down and run with a little bit less pressure in a totally different meet. You know, you go from a meet with 21 kids down to a meet with, you know, I mean, 21 teams down to a meet with maybe 5 or 6 teams. And so it'll be really good. I really look for our long jumpers down there at San Juan to have a good day because that pit is a super favorable long jump pit, the way it's laid out. And the fact that the kids will be able to have some time to jump and actually have coaching. You know, it's hard. What a lot of people don't realize is the home meet, all my coaching staff's helping me get the meet running smooth. And so the kids don't get a lot of personal coaching at the meet, and they'll get that at the San Juan and the Delta meet. So that'll be nice for us to actually be able to help some of these young kids. I do think that hurt us a little bit at our home meet.
Well, Coach, it is always fun to get you on. So great to hear how the kids are progressing. I know it's a long but short season for you guys. It'll be a busy week, and I look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
Thanks, Jordan.
We're going to pause for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. Yesterday was Selection Sunday in the world of college basketball. We'll get to that. We'll also talk some NBA basketball. That's all straight ahead right here on Drive Time Sports.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
It's time for that Monday basketball talk here on Drive Time Sports as we are down to the final 15 to 14 games of the regular season. And things are heating up in the Western Conference. I think the play-in round is going to be very entertaining, but I also believe entertaining is a relative term, and it doesn't necessarily mean that anyone in the play-in round has a chance for a championship. We'll talk more about that. We'll also talk about the Eastern Conference in general. Joining us right now, as he does each week, we have James Holis. James, always a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, brother. I'm sitting here happy like a fat cat. I'm holding my breath about the Celtics, and I'm not going to lie. I'm enjoying watching the Lakers kind of deconstruct, but I'm not gonna rub your face in it.
No, go right ahead. You have every right to do it, especially as a Celtics fan. But I do want to start by talking about the Celtics before we do that. If we look over the last 5 games, wins against Phoenix, Portland, Utah, Phoenix again, and Washington, one of the things that does stand out to me about this team, this is following back-to-back losses to Cleveland and Denver, and I don't think you can ever overstate this enough. When a team who is number one or number two in its conference takes care of business against the teams they need to take care of business against, James, to me, that's very telling. And I know that's something that the Boston Celtics have done following back-to-back losses to two good teams. I think that's a mark that sometimes gets overlooked. Beat the teams you are supposed to beat. Oddly enough, there are a lot of teams that we consider good teams in the NBA that have not done this as of late.
Yeah, man. It's all about, you know, can you hold your own against the elite? Obviously, crush the ones that you're supposed to beat, and then, you know, do better than average against the average. So, Boston right now is hitting on all cylinders. I'm worried almost that they're peaking a little too early, right? There's like, what, maybe 15, 20 games left in the season, and Jaylen Brown has been the best player on the team for the last 2-3 weeks. Tatum is still trying to find a shot, and doesn't even matter. You know, the Celtics cracked the Wizards without 3 starters. We're up by 30-something at one point. At the other end of the spectrum, I think I just heard a stat today that blew my mind. The Lakers are the only team with a winning record that have a negative point differential, which is insane to say out loud. The lack of consistency with a superstar like LeBron James and Anthony Davis playing as many games as they both played, the lack of consistency from this team is just startling, right? Because normally LeBron James is the tide that lifts all boats, and you got him on your team, you're going to kind of, you know, things are consistent, but I don't know what to make of these Lakers.
I don't either. And I think at some point in time, when you get 65, 70 games into a season, you got to look at a team and just be realistic about it. This isn't a good team. The roster construction, for whatever reason, it hasn't worked. We could say here probably spent an hour talking about that. I know you weren't big on it going into the season. I think coaching is a little bit below average. I think everyone can agree. I'm surprised that Darvin Ham still has a job here in March, although there were times where it looked as if this team was playing better basketball. You know, but it goes back to the front office as well. That's the thing, James. Like, there are multiple areas that you could point fingers at. I think engagement has also been embarrassing at times for this team. They're failing on multiple levels, and they're not the only team doing that. We're going to talk about the Lakers because we have LeBron James, we have Anthony Davis. But look, the Phoenix Suns are another team. I mean, they're packed with star power. Yes, they've had their injury issues. For a team with this much talent to be sitting at number 8, you have the Dallas Mavericks, a team that has just a lethal backcourt and Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. They're sitting in the 7. The play around's going to be entertaining, but I can't take any of the teams 7 through 10 right now serious enough based off what we've seen in 65 games to say that team can make a deep run and win a championship. I can't do it.
Yeah, man, you nailed it. Like, you know, a team that's in 7 or 8 or 9, the questions could be there, but like the biggest answer is they're probably not very good, or they have glaring flaws. That's why they're 7, 8, or 9. With Phoenix, I believe a big issue, obviously, also roster construction. But that's the price you pay when you go all in to get a guy like Bradley Beal. I don't think Beal was the guy to go all in on. And maybe he was like, you know, the only thing they had. Like, it's almost like when you work for a certain company and they have a budget and they go, hey, we got to spend this money by the end of the year, or next year our budget will be smaller. So you might buy some stuff you don't necessarily need. You can use it, but you didn't need it, and you might overpay for it. That's where Bradley Beal was, I think, when it came to the Suns. They made the deal. Everything else is minimum, you know, minimal roster kind of guys, minimum salary kind of guys. So, and that's where it shows up. So past the top three, with Devin Booker being in and out and Beal being in and out, and even KD had a couple injuries, once you get one of those guys off the floor, you're severely hampered when you're at the Suns. And that's where it's going to come down to. They can't keep those three healthy at the same time, and they won't have a prayer.
Let's stick with the West. We'll talk about the Clippers. Seems like every time you and I jump on this bandwagon and say, wow, you know, the Clippers look good, this team looks legitimate, I still believe, front to back, they may be one of the best rosters in the NBA. But the fact is, over the last 5 games, they've suffered losses to Milwaukee and Minnesota. Again, those are two teams that are the elite. They did pick up a win against the Bulls, but then they lost to New Orleans and Atlanta. And those are the two losses that are really, really hard for me to overlook at this particular time, especially when you're getting solid performance out of Paul George, you're getting a solid performance out of Kawhi Leonard, and you're still losing games to the likes of the Pelicans and the Hawks in March. That's tough, James. That's very tough to overlook.
So the Pelicans, you can chalk up to the Pelicans are the enigmatic team that is very talented, but maybe doesn't have the reps. TJ, Brandon Ingram, and Zion really haven't played on the floor together that much. And, you know, it kind of waxes and wanes. But other than that, the Pelicans are actually a solid team. Like, Trey Murphy, the guys they have around their top three are actually really good. So I can see the Pelicans loss. The Atlanta loss, that's unacceptable. And basketball, we know, it's, you know, what happens on the court. These talented players, a lot of measurables, you can get points. But I think a real basketball team, there's something you can't quantify. A certain soul to a basketball team that matters. And that the Clippers have no soul, right? Kawhi is famously a robotic kind of guy. Paul George is like a stereotypical number two. I think he's a front runner kind of player where he's a great weapon to have, but he's not going to be your leader. James Harden, notoriously poor performances when he's leaning on in the clutch. We know he's, you know, this is supposed to help him out because he's not the best player on the court. Russ is now a bit player and he's injured. So I think this team is talented. Like you said, top to bottom, there's a lot of nice pieces there. But there is no one guy to kind of like rudder the ship. Sure, Ty Lue is kind of that guy, the coach. And we've seen teams win with the coaches kind of the heart and soul, but it's very rare, right? Draymond is the guy for Warriors. I thought Marcus Smart was the guy for Celtics, and now maybe Tatum and Brown are taking ownership of the leadership some. There's just no guy that you really look to on in the Clippers. You say, that guy is going to lay down in the mud and fight when the time comes, other than Westbrook, and Westbrook's now a bench player. So, the Clippers are enigmatic. I'm excited to see them in the playoffs to see if they can shake their demons.
Yeah, but they're also in a tough spot because, so, well, let me ask you this before I ask this next question. When you look at the Western Conference playoffs right now, can we agree that Denver more than likely will be the one seed going into the playoffs? I believe they overtake OKC. Do you agree?
Maybe, and I think so. And even if they don't, Denver is, I think, probably head and shoulders the best team in the West. So, one seed or not, they're still the best team in the West. So, yes, for the sake of this argument, I will agree.
Okay, let's say they grab the one seed. That means in order to get in to the Western Conference Finals, the Clippers, if all things stay the same right now, and Denver was to top OKC, Denver, as that, or the Clippers, rather, as that four seed, would have to get through New Orleans. Then they would have to move on, and they would get the Nuggets, and then they would have to take on either the winner of OKC and Minnesota, if all things were to stay equal. That is a gauntlet when you look at it right now with the Western Conference. This is part of the reason why I don't buy into any team that's 7 through 10 right now going into the play-in round. Regardless of what set of the bracket you are on, you're going to have to go through some elite squads. You're going to have to get through Denver, Minnesota, and either the Clippers or OKC. Like, I just don't know if there's a clear path for the Clippers right now sitting in that 4-5 spot. To me, they needed to move up into the top three, and that's not going to be possible.
Yeah, and, you know, you're absolutely right. But this is, I think this goes more towards how the West is an absolute bloodbath versus an indictment of the Clippers, right? Even though both things can be true. The Clippers, after a raging hot stretch, you know, once Harden kind of got acclimated, they looked like the best team in the West, if not the best team in the league, for about, I don't know, a month and a half. And now they're looking very ordinary again. And, you know, kind of like the adrenaline might be wearing off some, and they're kind of, you know, flaws are starting to stick out. But any team in the West is going to have a gauntlet like that, right? With OKC, the Timberwolves. Health is going to come into play, right? Karl-Anthony Towns, we're not going to sure if he's going to be back and ready to roll, which makes a big difference. Denver looks a little thin. Obviously, their starters are great, and they've been, you know, they're a buzzsaw. They're very businesslike. The bench is doing what they have to do. But, you know, the bench is kind of maybe a question in the playoffs. Guy like Peyton Watson. Yeah, and the Clippers, they have all the tools. But much like the Celtics last year, they had all the tools, and mentally things just kind of weren't there. They weren't mature enough in certain places. Let's see if Ty Lue has his work cut out for him.
Speaking of having your work cut out for you, let's jump back over to the Eastern Conference. Cleveland Cavaliers. If they are healthy, how tough of an out is this team? And I say if, that's a big if. We know that this is a team that's been depleted by injuries all season long, yet they still have 42 wins. If this team is healthy, how difficult of an out do they become?
I want to say pretty tough, but then I can't shake the memory last year of a less talented but tougher Knicks team just pushing them around. I believe it was Bomani Jones that came up with the saying that the Cleveland Cavaliers don't have big men, they have tall men. They just have talls. And it's very true. If you get physical with them, if you push them around, if you go right at them, they folded. Jared Allen famously said it himself last year, the lights were a little too bright. So did they use that experience? Are they going to come back a little tougher? Are they battle-tested? Possibly. We do know that Donovan Mitchell can have tremendous playoff moments, like some supernatural-type stuff almost, when he has the right people around him. We do know that I think Darius Garland is a reasonable number two. That would be my one question about them, right? So small in the backcourt. But on paper, and like you just said, 42 wins with all the injuries they've had, maybe this is giving guys reps, and last year's disappointment might have kind of catapulted them in the playoffs. But until they do it, I got to see it.
I had someone bring up, we were talking about the Eastern Conference this weekend, I had someone bring this up to me, and we talked about the Pelicans a moment ago, so I actually thought it was an interesting conversation. Are the Orlando Magic the New Orleans Pelicans of the Eastern Conference? When you take a look at the way this team is built, obviously there are some pieces that New Orleans has that nobody else has, but when you take a look at this Magic team, fun, exciting, gritty, play hard, right? They got 40 wins already. They're going to be a top five team, I believe, in the Eastern Conference. Is that a comparable comp?
I guess. Who? Obviously not a one-to-one comparison. I get that, but like, sure, you know, Banchero's a big physical, basically what would be a power forward 10-15 years ago, he's now a wing playing, yeah, handling the ball, kind of like a Zion Light, you know, pardon the pun. They kind of do it by committee. A different guy gets up every night. They don't have a Brandon Ingram, you know, a big-time scorer on the perimeter, unless you want to squint and say that, you know, one of the Wagner boys. Which one is the good one? I think Franz is the better one.
Yeah, Franz the better one, yeah.
Right, and then, but, yeah, undersized guards, sure. You can look at them and say they're almost like a bizarro Pelicans when they're clicking at their best.
they can be defensively suffocating, you know, but you got to have, obviously you don't have to start off like the Pelicans do with a guy like Ingram and CJ and Zion, but it's been such an awkward fit. Maybe I think the guys maybe fit a little bit better in Orlando, but the talent level is not there. But yeah, I think everyone has to be cautiously cautious around the Magic because they are a tough team, but their lack of experience is where they're going to get killed in the playoffs.
Yeah, when I look at what they have in the post, I've actually been a big Wendell Carter fan for quite some time, and I kind of like the fact that this guy is playing some pretty decent basketball right now. I think he's hovering around 12, 13 points a game, averaging about 7 rebounds per game as well. Again, it's a weird piece, right, when you fit this all together because you got Banchero rolling with Wendell Carter in the front court. Those pieces are small. Right, I don't know. This Magic team to me is an intriguing team going into the postseason. It really is.
I think honestly, like this offseason, they could maybe be a free agent target. Like, imagine one big name guy like a Donovan Mitchell going there, right? So you know you got a real deal, all NBA All Star type guy surrounded by these teams. Like, that'd be fun. Maybe some young star wants to come there and strike out on his own. And look, as we're talking, think about this. A guy like Jaylen Brown somehow finds his way over there because the Celtics disappoint this year. Jaylen Brown surrounded by Banchero and some defenders. I would personally love it, and I would be wearing Orlando Magic jersey next year. But, yeah, so again, this much like we talked about the OKC a couple like last year and even now this year where all this has found money, the Orlando Magic are playing with house money. No one expected much from them this year. I think they're probably ahead of the curve developmentally-wise. And they all seem like they're valuable, high-character, hard-playing guys. So it's good to see.
You brought up the Celtics disappointing again, man. You are so pessimistic with this. This team's 53-14. 53-14, James.
Last year, the Bucks had the number one seed, and they got cooked by the Miami Heat. Sure, Giannis missed a game and a half, whatever. But he came back, and the numbers were there, so we can't say he wasn't healthy. And I remember watching that happen and kind of laughing at the Milwaukee Bucks. And then I laughed at the Knicks. And then the Miami Heat came for me, and there was no one to save me. So my point is that all the regular season fun and games, great. We saw Miami have to win 2 play-in games to get to the playoffs. So like that, or however many play-in games they had to win, that they actually lost to Chicago first. So maybe they had to win 3 games, I think. It's, none of that matters when the playoffs come around. You've got to be ready for the playoffs. And so, yeah, I feel more optimistic now than I did before. I'm not being a pessimist because this team looks like an absolute buzzsaw. But the games that count are when it counts. Other than that, I don't. It's fun, and I don't feel bad anymore. I'm not negative about it. But I mean, the ghosts of playoffs past are still hanging around.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. James, is there anything else popping off in the league right now that we haven't talked about that at least has caught your interest?
If I sat down and thought about it, I should have thought about this question before I came on the show because I want to toss anything out. I do enjoy the will they, won't they, and this is I'm not being sarcastic at all because I know that expectations have shifted. The drama at the bottom of the West is really interesting.
That is. It is.
LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Steph Curry, Draymond Green. These are superstar names, and they are scrapping and clawing for the 9th and 10th seed. It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Again, the Phoenix Suns, we talked about it, but let's talk about it again. Two certified superstars in Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, and then you got a guy like Beal, max contract, all-star Beal, and they are struggling to hold on. You know, they're out of the top six. It's a fascinating race at the bottom, full of talent in the West.
The Western Conference play-in round right now, if it was to begin tonight, would feature Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis. Think about that.
And you know what? I think this speaks very well to the job that the Denver Nuggets CEO GM has done, and let's be real, the Boston Celtics CEO, GM, Brad Stevens, because let's be real, Tatum has been really, really good, not maybe MVP quality, but normally best player on the best team gets some kind of talk, and all the talk is, well, the Celtics are too good, because they've gone all in, they drafted well, and they've made some very shrewd moves. Drew Holiday, absolutely stud, and he's probably our fifth best player in our starting lineup. It's incredible. So,
Yeah, man, it's going to be, you know, this last stretch. Obviously, as a Celtics fan, I'm not worried about it. But this last stretch with teams jockeying for a position is going to be fascinating.
He's James Holis, joins us each week to talk NBA basketball. James, of course, before I let you go, you got to tell us where we can find more of you.
Basically just Twitter. I am a featured player on the Casual Diehards podcast with my man Jesse Spector. What's up, Jesse? I'll make sure I send him like this timestamp, so I shouted him out. Him and the crew over there are doing good things over at Casual Diehards, so check them out. And but yeah, at Snotty Drippin. Homage to one of the greatest players of the 90s, Scottie Pippen, who's a real weirdo these days, but I still love him.
James, it's always fun to get you on the show, man. I appreciate the time.
You the man, brother.
We're going to pause one more time. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports when we return.
Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Because every minute, every hour, you'll be shaken by the strange and mighty power.
Unfortunately, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. One of those days where an hour is just not enough. We have so much to get into. Yesterday, Selection Sunday in the world of college basketball. I think the Utah bracket is going to be phenomenal. The basketball that we get up north is out of this world. We have time to get into that a little bit later on this week. We'll also announce another $1,000 giveaway as we team up with Farm Bureau Financial Services and Richard Hackwell. Something that we have never done before. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting. So we'll get into that a little bit later this week. Tomorrow it's Football Tuesday, and there is a ton of storylines that we have to get into the NFL. I swear it's a year-round league. They just write their own. It's like they got a script writer or something. Always relevant in the national sports realm. So that's coming up tomorrow. Always fun to be along with you on the afternoon drive. Utah Jazz basketball coming up tonight. Live coverage at 6:50, tip off at 7. Until then, be safe. I am out.